Corinthians chapter 7. I'd like to read verses 20 through verse 35. Let every man abide in the same calling wherewith he was called. Art thou called, being a servant? Care not for it. That is, do not be anxious about it. If thou mayest be made free, use it rather. For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. Likewise also that he is called, being free, is Christ's servant. Ye are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. Brethren, let every man wherein he is called, therein abide with God. Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord, yet I give my judgment or my opinion, as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord, to be faithful. I suppose, therefore, that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man to be so, or so to be. Art thou bound unto a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none. They that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoiced not, and they that buy as though they possessed not. And they that use this world is not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. But I would have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. He that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely or beautiful, and that you may attend upon the Lord without distraction. We've preached from these verses on several occasions. Nothing new this morning. There are some lessons here that are extremely important, that God's people get a grasp upon, or should we say that these truths get a grasp upon us. But this portion of Paul's letter to the church located in the city of Corinth, and Corinth, of course, serves as a picture of the world, serves as a picture of the society in which we live. It was very materially prosperous city. It was a center of trade, therefore it was a very busy place, one of constant activity. As far as worldly pleasure, it was unrivaled. The city of Corinth was unrivaled in all of Greece. Being a city of trade, it had been inundated with all kinds of religion, all kinds of philosophies, and it was just simply a very pagan city. But God had a people there. When Paul first went to Corinth, God told him in Acts 18, verse 10, "For I have much people in this city." But in time, there was a problem with the people of God in that city. And the problem was this, it's the same problem we face today. They became their surroundings. God's people became their surroundings. It's always been a problem. It's no less a problem today. In fact, Paul, in writing the letter, told them three times in 1 Corinthians 3, verses 1 and 3, that they were carnal. Three times he told them, "You're carnal." He asked them a question in verse 3. He said, "Are ye not carnal and walk as men?" And that question defines what is meant by carnal. They walk as men. In other words, they are fleshly minded. They are worldly minded. They were absorbed with the physical. They were absorbed with the material. They were absorbed with the temporal. Their way of thinking, their views, their attitudes, their emotions, their lives were more in line with temporal things than spiritual things. This is what it means to be carnal. Their object and focus, their values and loyalties were in the world rather than in the realm of spiritual. Their aspirations, their joys, their pleasures, their satisfaction, their security, their pursuits were in the world rather than spiritual. That's what it means to be carnal. Their lives were more intertwined with the world than with God. Their lives were more weaved to the physical and the material than the spiritual. That's what it means to be carnal. They were controlled and dominated by the physical and material more than the spiritual. As a result, their lives, their homes, their families were filled with the clutter of the world. And so all of this clutter was brought into the church. And be sure of this, the rubbish of the world does not come into the church without it first getting into the lives and the homes and the families of the members of that church. That's always so. It's the only way it can get in. Can't get in any other way. In our text, the seventh chapter begins the second part of Paul's letter. In chapters 1 through 6, Paul dealt primarily, not exclusively, but primarily with the sins that were within the church. And from the opening statement of chapter 7, he says, "Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me." So it seems that Paul had received a letter from them with some questions. And now he writes to answer those questions. We see verse 25, also chapter 8, verse 1, chapter 12, verse 1, chapter 16, verse 1. Paul is answering questions. He's answering some questions that had been addressed to him. Now here in chapter 7, in verses 1 through 9, the question was whether it was lawful to enter into marriage. The next question, verses 10 through 24, was whether it was proper for a saved person to continue in the married state with an unsaved person. And the third question in verse 25, whether it was advisable for virgins or for young women to remain unmarried. And this seventh chapter through all the years, and even more so today, has become a matter of controversy with many. And the reason for the controversy is because man allows his own ideas, his own opinions to get in the way of the plain declarations of God's Word. But concerning this seventh chapter, most spend the bulk of their time, if you read commentaries, they would spend the bulk of their time upon the subject of the questions. And I believe in doing so, they miss the main point, and they miss the main teaching. What is Paul's main point? What is his emphasis in answering the questions? Well, that is really established at the close of chapter 6, when he said, "Glorify God in your body and your spirit, which are God's." And I believe that's the emphasis as you get into chapter 7. He answers these questions, but the emphasis is not so much on the answer. The emphasis is upon their relationship to the Lord. And what he's telling them here in chapter 7 is, don't let life get in the way of serving God. That's what he's telling them. And that is a very real danger. If you are carnal, it's going to happen. Life is going to get in the way of serving God. If you are bent on human reasoning, it's going to happen. Life is going to get in the way of serving the Lord. And Paul is telling them here, don't let that happen. Don't allow it to happen. We are called, of course, to live above the temporal. And as you read through chapter 7, there is rebuke to their carnality. There is also a warning concerning their carnality, and there is an encouragement for them to live a life to the glory of God. There is an incessant battle for the minds of God's people. It is a constant struggle for every child of God. We all struggle with this. It is a constant struggle for us to maintain a proper perspective. And a proper perspective is a spiritual one. To maintain a proper frame of mind. And a proper frame of mind is a spiritual one. If our frame of mind is carnal, it's not proper. It's a wrong frame of mind. And I guarantee you, life is already in the way of you serving God, and it will continue to be so. Proper perspective is very important. It determines the decision-making process. It determines our pursuits. It determines our activities. Overall, it simply determines how we live our lives. So in this portion of the letter, Paul is expressing the importance of a proper perspective, and he is exhorting them to have such. So we want to speak this morning on from fractured to focused. First of all, there are some foundational principles laid down in this chapter. With regard to their questions, he mentions five things that they were to always consider. Five things that they were to give serious thought to. Five things that their lives were to be weaved around. Five things that are to govern and shape and mold their lives. These are five simple foundational truths that you and I must never, ever lose sight of. No matter what our circumstances, no matter what our position in life is, these are five things that we must always remember. And if we remember these five things, it'll prevent life from getting in the way. Oh, it's so common today. Could you do such and such? Well, brother, I would if, and here comes a list of 200 other things that they've busied themselves with. Life has gotten in the way. You didn't set out and mean for it to happen, but it did. Happens all the time. And that's where we are today. But first, the first truth we must remember is that we are here to serve God. In verse 17 we read, "But as God hath distributed, given or imparted to every man, as the Lord hath called or appointed, so let him walk." That is, you walk in that sphere of life, you walk in that particular realm. And then we are reminded that not everybody is in the same situation. Not everybody's in the same circumstance. Not everybody's in the same position in life. And in verses 18 and 19, we are reminded that not everyone has the same background. And in verses 21 and 22, we are reminded that not everyone has the same occupation. Not everyone has the same status. And he goes on and he uses the example of one who his occupation is that of a servant. In other words, he is a slave. And he says, "And thou being called, art thou called being a servant? Care not for it." That is, do not let that lead you to deep anxiety and stress. Do not deem that position as a disgraceful one. Let it not affect your spirituality. And then he goes on, "But if thou mayest be made free," so circumstances can change. If you have the opportunity to be free, use it rather. That is, avail yourselves of such an opportunity. But the key to it all is at the end of verse 22, Christ's servant. No matter what your occupation, whether you be a slave or whether you be a free man, and no matter what opportunities come your way, remember this, you are the servant of the Lord. No matter what else happens. This is what he's saying. This is your main vocation. You are the servant of the Lord. And your occupation, again, in this case, whether it be a slave or whether it be a free man, is not to interfere with this simple fact. You are the servant of the Lord. Do not let it get in the way of serving the Lord. Christ's servant. Everything must center around this fact. This is what is to identify us. I am the servant of the Lord. This is what is to define our life. I am the servant of the Lord. Our position is not what defines our life or shouldn't be. It should be this. I am the servant of the Lord. Christ's servant, those words need to grip our hearts. That's our calling. That's our calling in life. And everything else is to revolve around that. As Christ's servants, we must be possessed with a willingness. We must be possessed with a readiness concerning what He would have us to do. We are His servants. As such, we are to be available to Him. We're not to allow life to get in the way and cause us to be unavailable. Do not allow that to happen. And you won't if you remember this truth. I am here to serve the Lord. That is my number one priority. I am here to serve the Lord. As Christ's servant, you will be submissive to His rules. You'll be submissive to His ways. You'll be submissive to His interest. And it will be your intention to obey. It will be your desire. He will be the desire of your life. He will be the priority of your life. It will be Him that you give the most earnest and diligent attention to. It is to Him that you'll be the most committed to. Our eyes are to be upon Him. Our ears are to be open, listening to Him. And we are to plan to serve God no matter what. And we've spoken on this in the past. There aren't very many today that plan to serve God. They plan to do everything else. And if God fits in, they'll fit Him in wherever they can. But it's not their plan. But if we remember, I am here to serve the Lord, then you will plan to do so. It will be your plan. Also, we are to view ourselves as a purchased possession. At the close of chapter 6, there is the statement, "You're bought with a price." And in verse 23 of our text, it is again plainly stated, "You're bought with a price." Now that is a very motivating statement. In chapter 6, it is used to motivate us to glorify God. And in our text here, it is used to motivate us to be not the servants of men. Be not the servants of men. Do not become entangled in life. Do not become entangled with life. Hear those words personally. ye are bought with a price. Why didn't he just say ye are bought? The very word bought indicates that there was a price. But he says ye are bought with a price to emphasize what was paid for us, to emphasize that the purchase was expensive. Ye are bought with a price. And yet people today will say, well, you don't understand. So-and-so has been good to me and I owe this to them. Ye were bought with a price. No one deserves more than Jesus Christ, who shed his blood for your hell-deserving soul. You're bought with a price. We must remember that in all areas of life. I am a purchased possession. I do not belong to this world. I do not belong to my family. I do not belong to a corporation. I do not belong, and on and on and on we can go. I belong to the Lord. That's first, that's foremost. If we don't think this way, we're carnal. It's as simple as that. I am a purchased possession. And therefore, he ought to be our ambition in life. We belong to God. And I have no right to serve myself. I have no right to serve my self-interest. I belong to God. He bought me. He paid for me. No matter what is happening in our life, you're bought with a price. Always remember that. Number 3, verse 24. He says, abide with God. Whether you be a servant or whether you be a free man, remember you are Christ's servant. Remember, you are bought with a price, and abide with God. That is, whatever your position, whatever your status, whatever your circumstance, abide with God. Adhere to God. Cleave to God. Hold to God. Stand by God. Continue with God. Remain with God. Persist with God. Abide with God. Whatever your circumstance, whatever your position, stay close to God. That's your responsibility. Don't let life get in the way of that. Stay connected with God. Always be identified with God. Do we get that? Do we get those three words? Abide with God. Remain close to God. Don't let life get in the way of that. Remain with God. Don't get away from Him. By the way, this is how you keep all the clutter out of the church. If every single member remains with God, you won't have a problem. There won't be any problems in the church body. Fourthly, verse 25, he says, be faithful. Be faithful. Whether you be a servant or whether you be a free man, and no matter what opportunities come your way, be faithful. Be faithful. Oh, Brother Dan, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. I can't turn this down. Be faithful. Abide with God. Remember, you are bought with a price. You are a purchased possession. There are some opportunities that you, in order to be faithful, you're going to just have to reject. It's as simple as that. The truth is, if we weren't carnal, you wouldn't even look at it as an opportunity. You'd look at it as an attack and as a temptation. The very fact that you look at it as an opportunity shows that you're carnal.
If it takes you away from God, that's not an opportunity. An opportunity is something good. That's an attack. That's an attack. Well, I got this job offer, but I have to work Sundays, but I can't turn it down. That's an attack. And if you don't get that, you're carnal. I mean, it's that simple. It's that simple. Be faithful. That is, be constant. Be devoted. Be unswerving. Be steadfast. Be dedicated. Be committed. Be dependable and reliable. Always in a position ready and willing to be used in His servant service as He sees fit. Be faithful. You know why many aren't faithful? There's a lot of reasons. But one thing, in order to be faithful, you have to know what He requires. You have to know what He requires. A lot of people don't want to know, because they have no interest in being faithful. And it should always be our frame of mind and our responsibility. Be faithful. And then fifthly, it is stated by way of reminder, verse 29, the time is short. The time is short. The time is short to be Christ's servant. The time is short to abide with God. The time is short to be faithful. Everything around us reminds us that the time is short. Time itself declares that truth. Life declares that truth. Sickness, disease, and weakness declares that truth. Time is short. Death reminds us that time is short. This is always so. Time is always short. We're also reminded in verse 31 that the fashion, that is the ways and the methods of this world, passeth away, which is just another reminder that time is short. In other words, don't get caught up with this world. It's all dying. It's all passing away. And yet so many are engrossing themselves in that which is passing. That which is passing away. Serving and glorifying God in life and all the happenings of life, whatever may be, whatever our position we may be in, serving God is to be our business. It's to be our object. It's to be our aim. It's to be our priority in life. And the time is short. The time is limited. We all have a limited amount of time, and I'm not just speaking about death. We can become physically unable to do almost anything. Time is short. Our minds may leave us. Time is short. There's no getting around it. Time is short. Therefore, we must be determined and we must be zealous and passionate to be what God would have us to be and to do what God would have us to do. So you have five things. These are foundational that we must always remember. What is the scope of these things? How far do we take it? People are always asking that, well, how far? That very question implies disobedience, the spirit of disobedience. After exhorting us to a certain frame of mind, Paul then moves on to mention five areas of our earthly life in verses 29 through 31. which shows the scope and the extent of what he has been saying. We must possess and maintain this frame of mind in our married life. Don't let marriage get in the way of serving God. Notice verse 29. That both they that have wives be as though they had none. And though the instruction is addressed to husbands, it of course applies to both, husband and wife. The instruction is not to abandon or neglect marital responsibilities, because that would be contrary to other scriptures. So we know that's not what it's saying. But what he's doing, what he's saying is, what he's been saying throughout the whole chapter, is be committed in your married life to spiritual things. Be committed to spiritual things. The teaching is, whether we be a husband or wife, we should live our lives in view of our relationship to God first. The Lord is to have first place. When it comes to marriage, our view and our frame of mind ought to be, from both husband and wife, I am a servant of Christ. In this marriage, I am a servant of Christ. I have been bought. I am a purchased possession of the Lord. I am His property. I must stay close to God. That needs to be the view, the perspective of husbands and wives. I must stay close to God. No matter what the marriage is, I must stay close to God. Some have better marriages than others. There could be a lot of reasons for that, but that's another subject. But regardless of the state of your marriage, I am a servant of Christ. Still remains so. I am a purchased possession. I must stay with God. I must stay close to God. I must be faithful. I must be faithful. So what he's saying is what he's been saying all through the chapter. God must be first. Secondly, we are to possess and maintain this frame of mind in affliction. Verse 30. They that weep as though they wept not. This is not instruction against weeping. Again, that would be contrary to other scriptures. That's not the point. But what he's saying is, in times of weeping, you must not allow the sadness to get in the way of serving God. Well, how do you do that? You remain spiritual and you do not become carnal. Do not allow afflictions to deter you from your service to God. Do not let sorrows control and dominate you. But in the midst of it all, remember, I am Christ's servant. I must abide with God. I must be faithful to Him. The sorrows in life are not to get in the way of this. God is to be our focus in afflictions. Thirdly, possess and maintain this frame of mind in times of joy. And they that rejoice as though they rejoice not. That is, in times of pleasure and jubilation and gladness, do not allow those times to come in between you and God. But maintain this point of view. whether I'm suffering or whether I'm in a time of gladness, that's really not what's important. But I am Christ's servant. I am His. And I must stay close to God. And I must be faithful to Him. In other words, God is our focus in joy. We're to possess and maintain this frame of mind in business affairs. Verse 31, and they that buy as though they possess not. The direction is, once again, He's not condemning buying. He's not condemning possessing. But what He's saying is, whatever you buy, keep everything in the right perspective. You're His servant. You're to stay close to God. You're to be faithful to Him. Do not buy anything. And whatever you do buy, do not allow it to come in between you and God. That's just simple advice. The spiritual have no problem with that. It's the carnal. Fifthly, possess and maintain this frame of mind in all our worldly concerns. We all have concerns. We all have deep concerns. We all have burdens. But He says, they that use this world is not abusing it. That has to do with making necessary and proper use of the world. What is the necessary and proper use of the world? Well, it furnishes us food, clothing, medicine, protection, etc. And it's right to use the world in those regards. It was made for those purposes. But we're told not to abuse its use. There's the problem. There's the problem. We are not to make it a mere matter of indulgence. When we make the provisions of the world matters of indulgence, we've now abused it. Who amongst God's people is going to abuse it? The carnal. It means simply you do not make it the main object. You do not make it the main purpose in your life. Because it isn't. The main purpose in your life is that you're Christ's servant. That you're to stay close to God. That you're to be faithful. So none of these five things, marriage, sorrows, joys, business affairs, or any of our worldly concerns are to get in the way of serving the Lord. But each of these are to be avenues of serving the Lord. They're not to get in the way. But they're to be things that we use to serve God. This needs to get hold of God's people. Because most have lost sight of why we're here. Then we see the purpose of all of this. Why did Paul give all these exhortations? Well, he states that in verse 35. And this I speak for your own profit. I tell you these things for your own good. Now, why did he say that? Because human nature then is no different than it is today. He knew that these things were going to upset folks. It's amazing to me how many times you tell God's people, God needs to be first. Put God first. Put God first. Put God first. And they get angry. I mean, they get angry. So Paul has, and I imagine Paul was anticipating the same thing. So he said, just by way of reminder, I'm telling you this for your own good. I'm telling you this for your own good. I'm not the enemy. How many pastors? Well, we got to get him out. He's telling us to put God first. He's out of touch. He has no idea of reality. He needs to go. He becomes the enemy. Paul says, I'm not telling you this to ensnare you. I'm not telling you this to trap you. I'm not telling this to make your life miserable. I'm telling you this for your own personal gain, for your own personal benefit and well-being. And then he goes on to say in verse 35, I do not tell you this to cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely. It'll make your life beautiful. It'll make your life more meaningful. People come with all kinds of problems, all kinds of dysfunction. And you listen, and you try to be sympathetic. But somewhere along the line, if you're going to do them any service, you've got to say, why is it this way? Why is it this way? Well, I don't know. Well, let me tell you. Let me offer you some suggestions. Most people don't like that. But it's for their own profit. It's what will make their life beautiful. And then he goes on to say, that ye may attend upon the Lord without distraction. He's saying if you don't put God first in these five areas, you're going to get sidetracked. You're going to get drawn away. He says, I'm telling you these things that you can serve the Lord, that you can pay attention to the Lord without being distracted. He's saying, I'm telling you these things so that you don't get boggled down with that which is earthly. No child of God is happy when they are boggled down with the earth, because that's not why they're here. They're not happy. And they will say, they will use as an argument, I just want to be happy. Well, you're going about it the wrong way. The way to be happy, again, happiness is a result, not a pursuit. The way to be happy is put God first in all things, that you may serve the Lord without distraction. And distraction is a constant danger. It's a constant danger of each one of us, that we get sucked up in the quicksands of the world. And it is like quicksand. We get stuck in the quicksands of sin and flesh and simply the pursuits of this world. We need to give heed to what Paul is telling us. As children of God, our frame of mind at all times, and in all situations, and all decisions, and all pursuits, and all endeavors, needs to always be, I'm a servant of the Lord. I'm a servant of the Lord. Any decision I make must center around that. I am His. I'm not my own. I must stay close to God. I must stand by God. I must continue with God. I'm to be constant. I'm to be true, devoted, steadfast, dedicated, and committed to God. Need to always remember that. Remember those truths. No matter what happens. It really, truly, if you remember those five things, the whole decision-making process is really simplified. It really is. We make it more difficult by bringing in all the aspects of the world. You want to simplify it, get the world out of the way. And just concentrate on why you're here. Life is simpler when we do that. Life does not have to be as confused as it is today. It doesn't have to be that way. We make it that way. God help us to get a grasp of these truths. We don't have much longer. The Lord could come. We pray that He does. You and I, you do the math. Most of us have lived the majority of our life. Time is short. You can have a massive stroke before this day is up. Time is short. And we'd better start realizing what it's all about. What's really important. And that's the Lord. He saved my soul. What other motivation do I need? He saved me. And I'm to live for Him. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.